Hi.
Hi.
Thanks for accepting to answer my questions. As a designer myself, it's an honor to talk to you today. And for translation facilities for me later, this conversation will be recorded, if you don't mind.
Okay, that's fine.
So, as you're one of the most recognized and awarded brand specialists in the world, you're particularly involved into territories and regions branding, right?
Sure.
So how do you explain that so many territories and regions want so much to have their own brands?
I think there are several reasons for it. First of all, over the last 50 years, and certainly over the last 25 years or so, there is a much stronger movement amongst smaller countries to assert themselves. There are far more countries now than there have ever been before. Within countries, regions, the Basque Country or Catalonia in Spain, Scotland in Great Britain, and so on, are all trying to assert some kind of feeling of, not necessarily total independence, but a feeling of self-confidence about who they are. That's one group of reasons. And then you have Slovakia, all these countries that were formerly part of what we used to call the Soviet bloc. They are all coming back in and want to assert themselves. That's one reason.
Okay.
The second reason is that now, if you do not have a brand, a national brand, that is recognizable and which people can respect, then you don't get so much tourism. You don't get so much foreign direct investment, and your brands, when you export them, don't have the same value as other people's brands. I'll give you an example of this. I'll give you a particular example of this. Slovakia manufactures more cars per head than any country in the world. There are more cars made in Slovakia than anywhere else. But you will never see a sign on any Toyota, on any Peugeot, or any Citroën saying made in Slovakia. What happens is that these countries are used as cheap manufacturing facilities, and all the value added goes to the other countries. Now, what you've got then are a series of situations where you have countries which you might call great legacy nations, like France or Germany or Italy or Britain, where the nation is known, the products and services of certain kinds are respected, the art and cultural history is known, and so on. So they have a very particular place. And if you take, for example, your country, if you take France, it's perfectly possible to exploit that situation in your interest. L'Oréal in Paris, L'Oréal of Paris, for example.
No.
Classically, developing an idea around its country of origin, its city, its so-called city of origin. And that gives more value. A Polish cosmetic company, and there are several who are quite good, they can't say Dr. Irena Eris of Krakow, because that doesn't mean anything. In fact, if it did mean anything to anybody at all, it would mean I'm not going to buy it. I'd rather buy L'Oreal. So there are huge incentives here, commercial incentives, apart from the political incentive, apart from the incentive that I talked about earlier, asserting your own regional nationality, if you want to call it that. Apart from that, there are genuine commercial imperatives to do that. And because the world is becoming more and more competitive, organizations in branding cities, branding regions, branding nations are getting more and more concerned to do this. But there are huge problems associated with it.
Well, we see two kinds of regional brandings, since we have the corporate one that can attract companies to invest there, and we have the tourist branding. Do you think it's really important to split them?
No, I think there are not two, there are three.
There is
the issue of foreign direct investment. And foreign direct investment can be investment in all kinds of things. It can be investment in research. It can be that you have a research and development center.
Yeah, sure.
It can be manufacturing, but it can be all kinds of things. It can be investment into universities. It can be all sorts of things. And the crossover between tourism and foreign direct investment is not as simple, not as straightforward as you might think. For example, if I visit, for the sake of the argument, Slovenia very often, as a tourist, I may decide, as a tourist, to buy a house in Slovenia. So is that tourism or foreign direct investment? Where do you draw the line?
So
you have to be very clear that when you're talking about the way in which the nation or the region projects itself, that you're talking about a series of issues which are addressed sometimes to overlapping audiences, sometimes to different audiences, but the key to it is that you have an idea of France, an idea of Spain, an idea of Italy, an idea which you can interpret for different audiences in different ways. And you don't have you don't use the same words and you don't use the same images, but the idea behind the brand, wherever it manifests itself, has to be the same.
Okay. In a commercial way, for example, is there any risk for these regions to be related to a simple product as they sign to become a brand? Is there any risk to lose the culture of the regions to get some simple product? Not simple, but to become a product, yeah.
They are. That happens. If you look at Germany, that's not a region, it's a country. Germany is associated with very high-quality engineering. But it is not associated with smart clothes. So Hugo Boss does not make a big noise about being German. SAP, which is a German high-tech company, does not make a big noise about being German because it doesn't help them. You make a big noise about being German if you're in motor cars, if you're in engineering. And the same thing applies to a lot of countries. There are some countries where the associations are very, very, very strong. In some countries, you can have a very, very broad range of ideas which are related to the country. In other countries, you don't get such a broad range of ideas. So one has to accept that what people look at are stereotypes. I think the classic example is probably the United States, where there are three or four quite clear stereotypes about the United States. One of them is opportunity. There is nowhere in the world where you get more opportunity than the United States.
The American dream.
All that stuff. That's one idea. Another idea is technology. Steve Jobs, Microsoft, Apple, blah, 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 Silicon Valley and all that. It's a completely different idea, but a very powerful idea. The third idea is the high street. McDonald's, Disney, all that junk, all that stuff that we see. And those are three quite separate ideas. There are more, I won't bore you with it, there are more ideas about America too. Now these ideas are separate, but at different times you will think different things about America. For example, I read some very interesting research a couple of years ago when Bush was president in Egypt, in Cairo. Which country in the world do you hate most, dislike most? America.
Yeah, that's
question right. Number one, right. Question number 25, blah, 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 blah. Ask lots and lots of different questions. If you lived, if you moved, if you wanted to emigrate, where would you move to? America.
Absolutely, right. Yeah.
So that gives you a feeling of how people's perceptions are confused, they are contradictory, but they are powerful. And you get that about most countries. Of course, there are some, no, I wouldn't say that's not correct. You don't get that about most countries. You get that about some countries. There are other countries about whom there are no perceptions. There aren't any perceptions. I was working in Lithuania. So people in Lithuania say, what does the world think of Lithuania? The answer is it doesn't think of Lithuania. It doesn't think anything about Lithuania because it doesn't know it's there.
Yeah.
So there's that set of perceptions too.
In France, especially because it's a French website, these last 2 years, we've seen dozens of towns, regions, departments, or territories becoming brands.
Or trying to become brands.
Yeah, or trying. We even had a new country brand for France. And we're expecting a few more until the end of the year. Have you particularly noticed one, especially? Or not?
I think I noticed a couple of years ago, Lille.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very, very clever and very funny. It was a little boy who was a bit naughty and was a bit charming and was a bit sort of, not exactly rough, but a bit wild. And it was a very, very clever It was very clever, and I thought it was an extremely amusing and individual idea. And that was, it was a few years ago that I noticed it. I don't know whether they've kept it, but it was very, very, and they did a lot of things around this little boy.
Mm. That's right.
And I liked it. I thought it was good. Very clever. And very self-confident in a, in a relaxed kind of way.
Absolutely, yeah. I think so. Do you think it's these regional, really local brandings? Well, I because I know the situation in France, so we have dozens of them. Do you think it's something just trendy, or do we have to expect more and more territories brands during the next years?
I think both. I think it is trendy, and we do have to expect more of them. And most of them are not much use and won't work. Sometimes.
Do you think that's something that will last for centuries?
I think that what I said earlier, which is that the imperative to promote your area, whatever your area is, derives from local, if you want to call it patriotism, very strong local feeling about who you are, particularly in those areas which are changing from that. I mean, Lille is an example of that. It's an area which used to be heavily industrial and no longer is, that kind of thing. On the one hand, and on the other hand, it's a desire to attract a growing economy. It's a desire to attract people so that the economy can grow. There is a real commercial imperative for this. It's a requirement. Yeah. If I'm competing with somebody else and somebody else is promoting themselves more heavily than me, then they will get the investment and I won't, and they will come richer and I'll stay poorer.
Do you think this trend is crisis related?
No.
No. Okay, now Actilogo is a website more about logotypes, of course. So I'd like to ask you a few questions, if you don't mind, about graphism.
Sure.
Does your work involve design?
Sure, a lot.
So also you're not a designer yourself.
No.
Right.
But I'm very involved in it. I'm very interested in it.
Yeah, and you advise.
Well, I think I have a feeling for it. Maybe I don't, but I think I have a feeling for it. But
yeah,
I didn't study design professionally. My academic background is history.
I know that. What makes to you a good territory logo?
I think one of the main characteristics is that you see it very often. You know, if you see anything enough, however good or bad it is, if you see it again and again and again, you just can't avoid it. You can't mistake it. It's just there. It doesn't matter whether the stars and stripes is a good logo or a bad logo. It doesn't matter. You see it. The flag is so ubiquitous. You see it so everywhere that you can't really avoid it.
Even if it's something really ugly, for example?
You get used to it.
Yeah.
You get used to it. I mean, there are the national symbols, ubiquity, their constant, their continual presence is very, very, very important. Of course, the American flag is fortunate because there's nothing quite like it. The UK flag is also quite fortunate because there's nothing quite like that either. The French flag is very, very distinctive, but that's not because the flag is distinctive. It's because France is distinctive.
Yeah.
The Italian flag, which as we know, is an imitation of the French flag or an emulation of the French flag.
But for me, flags are not logos.
No,
that's distinctive.
I understand that, but I'm mentioning that as a context. I think that if you're talking about logos, for me, one of the world's great logotypes, almost perhaps the greatest logotype, is the Red Cross.
Mm-hmm.
Because what it says quite clearly and unequivocally, without any doubt in anybody's mind, is this is total vulnerability. We have no weapons, we have nothing. We are completely neutral, and if you want to kill us, you can kill us. But the vulnerability is so great, the feeling that you have about the Red Cross idea is so strong, that if you actually attack the Red Cross, you are committing such a hideous crime,
absolutely,
much worse than any other crime.
That was my next question, actually. What's the best region brand and logo that you've ever seen?
I can't tell you immediately in my head which logo or brand idea of a country that I've ever seen has struck me as being very, very, very deeply moving. But I think one of the most distinctive is Japan. Mm-hmm. And that isn't just the flag. It's the way the Japanese create an idea of themselves in what they do. So Japanese logotype, Japanese things around Japan tend to have that rather dramatic simplicity, which I find very unusual and quite striking.
All right. And what's the brand you made that you're the most proud of? I know it's a difficult question.
People ask me that all the time. And I always say it's the one I'm working on now. Yeah. Whatever the one I'm working on now happens to be, is what I say. But there are two that stand out a lot, which I've been involved in a bit. One of them was Orange, the mobile phone company, now belongs to France Telecom. And the other probably was First Direct, the bank, the online bank. I think those two were pretty good. I think we've done some fairly dramatic things in this company. I think, have you seen A1, the new mobile phone company for Austria that we've done?
No, I didn't.
Well, it's worth looking at. I think it's very good. But, you know, times change, fashions change. Some of the stuff that I was involved in the 60s and 70s even has lasted very well. P&O, the flag for P&O,
yeah.
We did in about 1970 or something. I think it's still incredibly strong and incredibly powerful.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah. So I find it difficult quite to say this is my favorite or this is not my favorite. Some of them I don't like so much and some of them I like a bit more.
Okay. So which one do you like less?
I think the ones I like less are the ones where we have not been able to make changes because the nature of what the organization is doing has to stay the same. What happens is that a huge organization, like, let's say, Renault or someone like that, they have to stay in the same place in the world. But they have to keep changing because the world keeps changing. So I can't stay and not change what I look like. I've got to change what I look like in such a way that people don't notice I've changed. In other words, I have to stay where I am, I have to change a bit. And a lot of the work that we do inevitably is with very large companies who make gradual changes over a long period of time in order to stay in the same place, in order to stay in the position they were before.
Yeah.
Do you like it? I mean, do I like it visually? Not always, but I think sometimes the results are very satisfactory. They work very well. I think they're very effective very often. But a lot of the work that any organization does is to do with helping the organization to compete in a marketplace that is getting more and more and more competitive, where you have online sales, where you have competition from absolutely everywhere in the world, and where what you're doing becomes more and more and more intensely focused on certain areas. So you can't always make the dramatic changes that you want. You've got to make changes digital and so on so that you can make the thing work online or whatever it may be. Occasionally you get the opportunity to do something really dramatically new, but not that often. Most of the time you have to modulate. I mean, we're not in business to win awards. We're in business to help our clients be successful. If we produce work that's of very high quality, that's great. We like that. Sure.
Yeah. Do you have a brand that you didn't work on, but you would have loved to?
I would like one day, if it ever happened, to work on Europe.
Europe, yeah.
I would like that. I mean, the European idea is such a mess, and there's so no leadership, and there are so many problems associated with it because it's work in progress. Mm-hmm. And the fiscal structure, as we all know, is not working properly, and there are lots of small countries that are making lots of trouble, and the British are Eurosceptic and all. We know all that. But I think it is a great idea, and it is an idea that most Europeans simply do not understand. They have not been educated to understand what it means. To become a European does not mean to say you stop being French, or you stop being Parisian, or you stop coming from Manchester. It doesn't mean that. What it means is that you add another dimension to what you are. And I think that that is a program, if you can work on that, that would take, it'll take two generations before there is a European idea. But I would love to be involved in thinking the implications of that through. Yeah.
Right. Two final questions. Now, is there a recent logo change that you've especially noticed?
Well, everybody noticed Gap. Not a big deal. Everybody's noticed McDonald's. It's not such a logo change, but it's a change of... Yeah, I mean, these are what I'm talking about. Those are the things I'm talking about. They change because they feel, McDonald's clearly feels, it's got to look more warm, it's got to look more friendly, it mustn't be so aggressive, it's got to be interested in, you know, all the stuff with sustainability and so on. So it changes its appearance a bit, yeah, those kinds of things, sure. But I'm not obsessed with that. I think that's the nature of the commercial world.
I'm obsessed with the logo touch. Well, that's part of my job.
Sure.
The last question that I ask to every people I'm doing an interview. Do you have any advice for branding beginners?
I think that it's very important that you understand the new technologies that are emerging. I think it's very, very important to get hold of digital, because increasingly logos are moving. They're not static. And if you looked at what my old company did, thank you very much, my former company did on the 2012 Olympics 3 or 4 years ago, I think it was a very clever anticipation of the way in which that world is moving now. Everything is digital. Everything is moving. Everything's going to work with everything else. Everything's going to change color. Everything's going to change shape. Nothing's going to be static. Everything's going to be moving. And you have to remember when you design these, when you do this design work, that that's what it's about. If you don't remember that, then you will be stuck. And a lot of the work that I was involved in some years ago is not usable anymore, because that technology is so key. A young designer has to understand digital and think in three dimensions and think in movement.
Thank you very much, Mr. Orleans.
I'm delighted to talk to you. I'm sorry that we had difficulty in communicating.
That's okay. It's still such an honor for me to have talked to you.
Delighted to talk to you. Bye.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.